God,
God,
grant me the serenity
to accept the things I cannot change,
the courage to change the things I can,
and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. There is one little bathroom. Hold it is my suggestion, but it's right back there through that door. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. On Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA simple actions. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step four, the first section on resentment inventory. Please welcome our panel this evening. We have Matt and Mike from the Great Bridge Step Study Group. I will read the first paragraph on page 63, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Page 63. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. Being convinced that self manifested in various ways was what had defeated us, we considered its common manifestations. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease, for we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations, which had been interfered with? Matt?
Sure. Hey, I'm Matt. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Matt.
Thanks for having me tonight. Appreciate you inviting me. It's always a pleasure to come over to Simple Actions and do this. You know, this is one of my first home group, I think, I don't know, maybe 11 years ago-ish now. So, it was, I drug myself in here, you know, to this very group, very sore at the entire world. I was mad at, I don't know, everybody and everything that was around me. One of the things that happened to me was my best friend kind of turned on me being alcohol, and I had to remove that. I removed it from my life, and it left me with just me. And it was kind of a raw state of of just emotion and just feelings and just a bunch of ick. You know, I up until the point that I checked myself into a rehab, you know, I thought I was a pretty good guy. I just drank too much, right? Like, I set out on this weird path where I woke up every day and said I wasn't going to do it again. And by noon, I was starting to feel better and convinced myself that the night before was not that bad. And I would start all over again and kind of recycle that perpetual cycle all the time. And so, you know, I stripped all that away and I got in a lot of pain, a lot of fear. You know, I lost my best friend, alcohol, and I was just left with me and who I was, right? Which for me, it took 39 years. I really didn't know who I was. You know, I drank incessantly, nonstop from as long back as I could remember until I was 39 years old. And I just, it just ate me, right? And so all that time, things were happening in my life and I didn't realize it, but I had built up anger and resentment towards everything and everyone that came in contact with me in one way, shape or form or another. And when I looked at doing this fourth step, you know, I wish I could tell you that I set out on a course of rigorous action when it came to the fourth step. But man, when I got there, I was scared of it. It was, you know, I had never admitted or been honest about who I was as a person ever. You know, I'd even lied to myself to the point that I believed that I was a pretty good person. I drank too much, right? I thought I treated people with respect. I thought I was a good husband. I thought I was a good father. You know, I thought I was a good employee. I thought I was a good employer, you name it. I thought I was good at it, you know? And the truth is that the only thing that I was good at was using the crap out of you to get what I wanted. And I would lie, cheat, steal, whatever, you know, I joke about it and I've heard other people say it. I'm the dude that stole your wallet and helped you look for it. You know what I mean? That's just who my character, what my character was. And so now I'm in this spot and my sponsor's telling me I got to do this inventory. And don't get me wrong, the first two columns for me are it, you know what I mean? I can tell you who it is and why I'm resentful and all that. The third column's not even that bad because I can just tie it to like my pocketbook or whatever. But now I got to look at that fourth column and admit some things about myself that are probably not the easiest for me to do. So I took the long version, you know. It took me, I think, about 8 months and about 14 times of crumbling up my four step and throwing the trash can before I could actually say where I was at fault and do a full four step, right? I didn't know what freedom was. I didn't know what relief I was going to get from the four step. I didn't know what was going to happen, but I knew that there was some pretty shady stuff on there. And I really didn't want anyone else. See, it wasn't really the fourth step I was so much worried about. It was the fifth step that came after that too, right? So I'm playing it all the way forward and then I got to go out and say I'm sorry to people. Now I'm really freaked out. So I talked myself into a corner where I just threw it away. You know, I did a little bit and my sponsor would say, hey, where are we at on that fourth step? And I'd say, oh, I'm almost done. You know, the same thing that probably all of my sponsees have told me. So, you know, I'm almost there. I'm almost ready. And that's kind of the way that I went for a long time. I was scared to death to admit who I was, even though I knew deep down, you know, I knew exactly what I was. And it became a lot more apparently clear after you removed alcohol. I would love to say that when you removed alcohol from me, I became a saint. I would love to say that my life got really, really good after I removed alcohol. Now, I mean, stuff like sleeping in the front yard stopped, you know what I mean? And I was going to say that I stopped getting arrested, but I can't really say that either because there was this thing with my ex-wife. But at any rate, so that's another story. But no, I you know what I mean? Like my experience was that I didn't get sober. And then all of a sudden things got really, really great for me. You know, it was a struggle and I was in a lot of pain and today I'm thankful for that pain because it led me to the fourth step and allowed me to complete that fourth step. I've known a lot of people who've gotten to the fourth step and didn't complete it. I was whatever. I hate the cliche sayings, but the gift of desperation kind of entered my soul. And I was like, I was rotted, you know, I was rotted from the inside out. And there was not a lot of good left in there. And I needed to figure how to, well, I didn't need to figure out anything. I needed to do the step is what I needed to do. So thanks.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
Mike.
Good afternoon, folks, or good evening. Mike Alcoholic.
Hi, Mike.
Great to be here, and thanks for inviting us, Amy. Really appreciate it. Real quick, I'll qualify. My sobriety date is it's July 4th of 2019. So people often say, you mean July 3rd, right? Or they say, you mean July 5th, right? Because you drank on July 4th. I'm like, no, I just had a hell of a July 3rd. I didn't drink on July 4th. So it's 4th. It was a hell of a July 3rd. But July 4th, 2019 is my sobriety date. And it's important just to know about me. I won't go into the whole story, but I first came into the program in 2009. So I should have, I'm not good at math, almost 14 years of sobriety. And instead, I have 4 years and change. And that disappoints me, not because I wish I could wave the flag of I've got 14 years of sobriety. That's not what's important. What's important is that we have today. And all of us have today. At least we have this moment. And I'm going to get up and try to do the same thing tomorrow and have tomorrow. So I'm not mad in the sense that, you know, I can't brag or be proud of 14 years of sobriety, but it pains me that I went back out and had a whole lot of pain and suffering that I could have spared myself if I just did what you folks have taught me. I think I went back out twice. I put together a few years of sobriety on two separate occasions and went back out. Partly I'll tie it to the topic. Maybe I didn't do a good enough fourth and fifth step. I think largely my big character flaw is my ego. And I think I didn't stay grounded. And I think I got to the point in my sobriety where I thought I don't need to go to meetings as often. I don't need to call my sponsor. Then I geographically moved. And when you geographically move, nobody knows you're an alcoholic. You can go to the bar and you don't worry about if anybody sees you drinking. So, I've got a million reasons why I went back out, but the bottom line is I stopped doing what you folks tell me. That's the problem. But that's my background real quick. When I first did the fourth step, and I've done it three times with three separate sponsors, and I did it most recently with Matt as my sponsor, I realized that before this program, I had never really, really been honest about how I feel in my role in things. Not necessarily because I wanted to be a liar or I wanted to deceive. I had just gotten really good at making excuses, justifying things, blaming somebody else to give myself cover. I got so good at that became so normal to me that I did it without realizing it. And it really wasn't until I came into this program where I had to do a searching and fearless moral inventory and then admit to God, myself, and somebody else, or, you know, myself, somebody else, and God, all my character defects. That was something I'd never done. I'd gotten so good at blaming the other guy, right? I get a speeding ticket. I do something poorly at work. I fail the test in school. I lost the sports game. Whatever it is, it's always somebody else's fault. So it wasn't until this program and working with the sponsor and looking at the text of our book that I really learned what being honest was. And that was something I wasn't used to. And it was really tough. Because admitting I was wrong was something that was completely foreign to me. I didn't like it. I wanted to be perfect. As crazy as that is, I wasn't used to admitting when I was wrong. I always had an excuse for something, and I certainly was never going to admit that. So that was the first thing I had to come to terms with in this program when I got to the fourth step, was really being honest with myself. And at times, I didn't realize that I wasn't being honest. It was so second nature for me just to default to that justification. I really had to question my motives and dig deep and talk to other guys in the program in order to make sure I was being honest. So that's the first thing I really realized was, holy cow, this is the first time in my life that I'm going to be honest with myself and other people and with God about my role in things. And I'll tell you this, when I started doing that, it was a big weight off my shoulders. It was a huge weight off my shoulders. Because then I could start looking at the root cause of things. Why do I feel this way? Why do I get so angry when somebody cuts me off in traffic? I don't know. He's probably just you know, went too far. He needs to get over to exit. Why does that drive me nuts? Why do I still think at almost 45 years old, why do I remember my high school football coach yelling at me for something and it makes me mad? That's absurd. I haven't played high school football in 1996, but I still get mad at that. Why does that happen? I don't know. I think the answer is I'm an alcoholic and I get resentments. And so through this program, I learned that resentments really was my undoing. You know, that's the great thing about the fourth step, the fifth step, all the steps, 6 and 7, 8 and 9, is that I get to dissect myself and I get to see what makes me tick and what my liabilities are, what my character defects are, and what can trip me up. And so I know that my ego is a big thing. I know that my pride, which goes with ego, is a big thing. I know, you know, insecurities about, you know, money and having enough for retirement and all sorts of things like that drive me. But resentments are something else. Resentments are special. And our book talks about that. It focuses on that for us, for alcoholics. So I have learned that, like a lot of us, I am prone to having resentments and to get something focused in my mind and obsess over it, to get angry. I don't know about any of you. I haven't done this much lately, I think because I pray more and I do what this program says. But I used to wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning all the time. I'd use the bathroom or whatever. I roll over and I think of something that makes me mad, something from work the day before, something my boss said, some interaction with somebody else, something, some guy cut me off in traffic and we yelled at each other, something small that I should just pray about and get rid of. But I think about it. And the next thing I know, that little resentment that hit my mind at 2 in the morning, my alarm's going off at 5:30 and I haven't slept a wink. So that little resentment effectively wrecked my night of sleep. And I go into the next day angry and tired and pissed off, all because of my dealing with things in a healthy way. It sucks, right? The good thing is this program gives me an out, gives me a way to work through those things, to address them. So I've got a long way to go, right? I don't work a perfect program, but I will tell you this. I am a whole lot happier than when I was before. I bet Matt would tell you I'm a different person than when I called you up drunk and asked you to be my sponsor. And it's because of you folks. It's because of what the book says. It's because of the steps. It's because of the fellowship that I've learned to deal with resentments and other things. And that's really what we get into in the fourth step is really dissecting ourselves, which is important before we can move on.
Thank you. We're going to pick up the reading over on page 65. We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse, and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. Continuing on 66, it is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die.
Me?
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, it's Matt Alcoholic. So I really like this. And as it was being read, one of the things that I was thinking about is for me, fortunately, but unfortunately, a lot of times the only way that I learn is through enough pain. I'm not one of those natural guys that's just like, oh, I feel good today. Let me read some more out of the big book. You know what I mean? I got to sit in something and stew in it for a while. And I wind up in enough pain that I'm like, oh man, let me do something about this. Right. And it's gotten better as I've gotten more time in the program, but it takes me back to this particular reading takes me back to an occasion where my first sponsor and I were having conversations a lot, like every 20 minutes, about my resentments and the people that were doing me wrong in my life, right? Like I was just calling this guy up and just like spewing, right, about what everyone is doing to me and just how life has gone, right? And all the resentments and stuff that people are doing me wrong. And I remember having a conversation particularly over $20 over something. And it was my ex-wife and I, and we were supposed to split something. And my daughter was literally not going to play baseball because I was not paying the other half and she wasn't paying it. And we were like having this big thing, and it was over $20, right? And this went on for like 2 weeks. I carried this, like, we're having battles, right? Like we're having text battles. Now we're leaving messages for each other. And I remember my sponsor just looking at me going, you know, how much peace are you getting out of this? Like, is that $20 really worth, you know, the 2 weeks worth of pain and anguish that you've suffered to this point? And I remember thinking, yeah, you damn right it is. You know what I mean? Because obviously, you know, I was thinking on my own at the time. And it didn't even dawn on me, you know, like maybe say some prayers about that stuff and then listen to what he had to say and maybe take a suggestion, you know. And it took a little bit of pain. A lot of pain. And what I did was I actually paid that $20 and then I didn't think about it again, right? After I paid it. And I was like, dang, that felt kind of good. You know, like it's off my plate now and I don't have to worry about it. And those, I have tons of stories just like that, where I've carried stuff for a while and just like decided that I was more right than anybody else was. And I was just going to resent you to no end over it. Right. Like you were not going to get the best of me. And then I learned something, and I had people in my life, you know, point out to me that, you know, other people are sick, and sometimes they like to see you in pain and they want to see you suffer with things. And then there's other people who do something and they don't even know they did it to you, and they don't give it another thought. And I'm the guy that carries that for, I don't know, 39 years, whatever, you know what I mean? Like I'm the guy who gets to carry all that burden, and that person doesn't give another thought about me. And here I am, I'm like Mike talked about, and I'm losing sleep. I'm walking around with a chip on my shoulder. I'm just angry, right? And then I learn that I have some power over that by asking for it to be relieved or praying for that person. You know, I think the book says about 2 weeks. Some of them took 2 weeks, some of them took less, some of them took a lot more. But I prayed on it, you know, and I prayed it for those people, even though I was thinking the opposite sometimes, you know what I mean? When I had to deal with folks, you know, I went through a DUI in early sobriety. I went through, you know, losing my license, losing the job, those types of things, like all this life stuff was happening and I'm carrying resentments. And it just dawned on me, like, this is all heavy stuff that I don't really need to carry anymore. I don't have control over it in the first place. The outcomes are going to be what they're going to be. I can have my inputs into it and do what I think I can do, you know, to obviously do my part, but then I have to leave it alone. I got to walk away from that. And I got to tell you, that power, became, almost as addictive as drinking, I guess, you know, to know that I was getting relief from not carrying around those resentments. And it's funny that I get to share on this tonight, and because there's been a couple of things that have popped up, and I'll be calling my sponsor about soon, but you know, some things that are little tiny things, right, that I've just kind of been eating at me, and they're not really big deals, but one of them, a guy said something at work, and I took it personal, which it was not, but like that guy lived in my head all weekend long. You know, he got that space, and you know, and to me, the part that irritates me about that is no one should have that power over my peace and sanity at this point in time in my life, is kind of the way that I look at it. So I went back and I did some prayer on it, and I've relieved that, but I still need to probably do like a little quick mini fourth step on it, and just get it all out and get it out of the way. But it's funny how it eats me up. And, you know, one of the things that was shared earlier, you know, these things are the things that can return me right to alcohol if I let them, you know. I don't want any person or anything to have that type of power over me anymore. I've experienced freedom by doing these 12 steps out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and hanging out with you guys, everybody in the program. And I'm not going to give that up for anything at this point. And it is the truth, you know. Me and one of my longtime friends in the program were talking about this other day, all the people that we've had to take out of our phone and, you know, all the phone numbers that we've got of the people that have come and gone. And, you know, there was several that we know have passed away at this point. You know, I'm sitting at a meeting one day with a guy and the next week they're like, yeah, the guy killed himself, you know, or he drank himself to death or whatever. And, you know, that scares the crap out of me, because if I don't do this program and I don't pay attention to step four and all the rest of them, you know, that's what I'm capable of. That's who I am as an ex drinker. You know, and I can be just as crazy. And David and I were talking about this earlier too. Like, I can be just as crazy as I want to allow myself to be, but now that I've experienced freedom and joy in this program, like, I don't want to give that to anybody. I don't want to allow anyone to have that power over me and my program, or my higher power for that matter. You know, I want to live free and happy. I didn't come in here to get sad. And, you know, I came in here like that. I didn't come in here on a winning streak. You know what I mean? I came in here and I was bottom. You know what I mean? I was at the bottom. David remembers me from back when, and he always jokes about it, but he's like, I remember, I didn't even want to talk to you. You look so mad. Like, I thought you'd just kill me if you just looked at me. And man, I really was, you know what I mean? I didn't have the kind heart and the love that I do now, for everything and everyone. And I think that is at the crux of doing this step in this program and allowing a higher power to be that part of my life. So thanks.
Thanks, Pat.
Hey folks, Mike, alcoholic still.
Mike.
Great share, Matt. I share a lot of that. I said a few minutes ago that my biggest character flaw, at least I think it is my ego, my pride. And so along those lines, I like to be right. I can't stand being wrong. And so when I'm interacting with somebody else, I want to be right. Whether it's at work, whether it's in a relationship with a woman, whether it's something silly about, you know, just debating a trivia fact or something, I want to be right. And it eats me up if I let it, if I'm wrong. And that's how, for me, resentments form. And that's what I thought of from the reading, is that dealing with other people and the need for me to be right was something that I really struggled with a lot in this program. And I remember when I was new, I heard things that drove me nuts. I heard things like, I'd rather be happy than right. And I thought to myself, I don't think I ever said this to anybody. I had that enough sense not to say it. But the egotistical guy thought, yeah, but I'm happy when I am right. So I'm going to just be right all the time and then I'm happy. I thought that. And then I also thought, you guys are weak, right? You waffle, you cave, you're going to give the $20 to your ex because it's the easier thing to do. I used to look at that when I was brand new. I thought, that is so weak. What AA is teaching is just to roll over. And let me be clear, that is not at all what we're teaching. I have learned that what you all do, what we do, is to be extremely strong. I'm not going to take your inventory, but I'm guessing you gave Matt, your wife, your ex-wife, $20 because it just wasn't worth fighting over. And if we were beefing over 20 bucks about something and going back and forth, and you said, you know what, Mike, this isn't worth fighting over, I'm going to put an end to this, I'm going to give you the $20. What would that do to me? I would think, holy cow, what a big thing to do. What a confident, strong person Matt is. And what a kind of pathetic little greedy, yeah, you know, piece of crap I am, that I'm, you know, squabbling over 20 bucks. My point is, there's nothing weak about that attitude. And it took me a while to learn that. What we're teaching is to have the strength to really look beyond the minuscule, about the squabbles, and live our life. And I would rather be happy than right. It took me a while to come around to that, but I would rather be happier than white, right? One thing I try to do, and it's not a coping mechanism. I don't describe it like that. I really do think it's embracing the principles of this program. I try to be compassionate. And what I try to also do is be, is empathetic the right word? Is it empathic or empathetic? I try to relate to the other person and I try to give them the benefit of the doubt. Have I cut people off in traffic? You bet. A whole lot of times. And a lot of times I did it because I had no good reason. I just wanted to do it. I saw an opening and I thought, I can cut that guy off and save myself 30 seconds. I did it all the time. And I probably still do. I'm not saying I'm a perfect person. So what do I do now? Somebody cuts me off. I am not perfect. Maybe I'll honk, maybe not. But what I try to do, what goes to my mind is trying to give that person the benefit of the doubt and remember when I did the same thing. I've cut other people off a million times. Am I really going to judge that person based on what I did? Maybe that person's late for a doctor's appointment. Maybe he's really got to get home to, you know, pick up his kid from school, whatever. I try to give people the benefit of the doubt. But more than that, I try to take a step back and think about all the times before I came into this program and even after that I wronged other people. I've cut people off in traffic. I've squabbled over money. I've done you know, a lot of things that I relate in my fifth step that I'm not proud of. I've hurt other people. So when I'm wronged, it's really important for me to take a step back and realize that person isn't perfect. I don't know what's going on in his or her life. And maybe they're dealing with a whole lot more than I am in the moment. I've done things just like that. So cut him some slack. Mike, move on with your day. And you know what? That works. I'm not an hour later at the office having, you know, gotten to work, crumpling stuff up and angry and just thinking, oh, I should have like gotten out of my car at the light and kicked his dent in his car. I don't do that. I move on from it. Again, I'm not always perfect, but this program has helped me move on from that default where I have that kind of anger and that reflex. And I really do think that, you know, that kind of mentality, that thinking about what we've done in the past, what I've done in the past, and relaying that to whatever situation I'm dealing with somebody else lets me not only not deal with resentments or, you know, not have resentments rather, it lets me deal with them, but not have them. But it also makes me a better person, right? I've always been impressed when somebody can forgive. I think that's a real sign of strength. It's something I really want to get better at. So I'll keep coming back.
We're going to pick up still on page 66. We turned back to the list where it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way these disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done. We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one.
Matt, still an alcoholic as well. When I listen to that reading, that's like some of the most powerful words that could be written down. Because for so long, and the best way for me to describe this is I took everything so personally. I thought that when someone cut me off in traffic, for instance, they looked at me and they did it on purpose just to me. You know what I mean? If someone was promoted over me or whatever, it wasn't because that person deserved the promotion. It was because whoever was doing the promoting didn't like me for whatever reason. And it was, you know, it was all at the root of my own being. And it's still hard for me. That's probably one of my character defects that's hung on, is I take everything so personally, you know? And I think that this reading describes the opposite of that, right? Like, and it also reminds me that I have to take these principles and apply them in all my affairs. Because I'll tell you, one of the things that I'm really, really good at is sitting in here with you all and giving help and spending time and doing for you all to help you guys get sober or stay sober or get through an issue or whatever. One of the things that's hard for me to do is to go out there and do that in the real world with everybody that I have to work with, live with, be around. It can be a challenge, right? So when we take the reading that we just did and you look at it and it talks about treating that person as if they're sick, one of the things that I never thought of or never even dawned on me until, well, I don't know, like a year ago, maybe, I don't know. It's not been that long, is the fact that there's a lot of people in the world running around that are sick as well. And we're fortunate compared to them. We have a program and a place to go where we share time and fellowship and we share stories. I can't tell you anybody that I work with, live with, or am family with or whatever that has the outlet or the resources that AA gives to me. They can go to maybe counseling or whatever, see a shrink maybe once a week, or if they're really bad off, maybe twice or three times a week. But I mean, you know, no one has that ability. And, you know, if I'm feeling off, if I'm feeling rough, if I'm uncertain about certain things, I can pick up the phone and call one of 100 different dudes that are going to pick up the phone and are going to have take a half hour out of their day and have a conversation with me. And we're going to talk through whatever I'm going through. And most of the time I forget about what the hell I was even mad about or what was going on in my life, because they didn't change the subject. We talked about something else. Like, you know, I know my wife doesn't have that. You know, I know that my coworkers don't have that. You know, I can step out of a meeting that's gone sideways and call my sponsor or whomever and say, hey, this is what I have going on. And that has allowed me to have compassion for other people outside of the program more than I ever thought I would. You know, I was raised in a very masculine way. You know, you had problems, you fixed it, you didn't talk about it, you bottled that shit up and you got stronger, right? Like, that which does not kill you only makes you stronger. And I lived by that for a long time. And you know, and I have to tell you that I show more compassion to the mom and dad that taught me that than probably anybody else in the world does. Like, you know, they say to me things like, man, you're such a different person. You know, like, I can't believe what a different person you are. And I don't even know that they like that person that much now, like me, you know, which is okay. You know what I mean? Because I think a lot of times they think that I'm rolling over for life. You know what I mean? Like Mike had talked about. And man, I show a lot of compassion with those folks now. You know, I still call them at least once a week, even if it's just to hear them tell me about how I should be better at my job or should have more promotions or whatever it might be. You know what I mean? And I'm okay with that. I just listen and I'm like, yeah, I love you guys. I hope you're doing well, you know, and I move on. I show them the compassion and peace and serenity that the program's taught me to show somebody who's sick. Right. And it's funny because when the newcomer comes in and they're sick as hell and they're like I was when I first came in, I'll spend hours and hours and hours with them. Right. And then, you know, my sister will call me and want to talk about something. I'm like, oh, damn, I can't get wait to get off the phone. You know what I mean? Like, is she done yet? You know, so I have to keep that in mind that I didn't join this just so that I could be with you guys and hide my head in the program. Like, I have to actually take this out there and employ it in all of my affairs. You know, and I will share this with you. That's not weakness. You know, I thought that caring for other people was weak. You know, I thought that being empathetic to those that are, that have lost or are in a bad spot was weak. You know, you worked harder, you drove harder to get what you wanted. And I can tell you that did not work for me for 39 years. I can tell you that I stopped drinking. I did the steps. I continue to do all the simple actions that we talk about on a daily basis. Maybe not perfectly, but I do them. I can tell you right now, I've had more promotions and I've had better relationships and I've had more blessings in my life than I ever had in the first 39 years drinking, as compared to when I turn around and ask someone how I can be of use to them, as opposed to what can I get out of them. And I can only explain that paradigm, that change in my mental state as a result of doing these steps and being here with you all, and trusting that my higher power is taking care for me, you know, the things that I can't take care of myself. One of the greatest things that this program's given me is the ability to accept things and to understand that it may not always be my way. And I can kick and scream and throw a tantrum all I want, throw myself on the ground like a little kid or whatever, but the result's still going to be the same. It may not be what I want, but it's exactly what I need. And that has been proven on more than one occasion. You know, I lost a job, thought it was devastating. Absolutely. I've never, you know what I mean? I've never lost a job in my entire life. I lost it in early sobriety. And 6 years later, it's the best decision that ever happened for me, you know, and that's proof that things are happening in my life exactly how they're supposed to be, especially when I'm not in control of it. Because when I'm in control of it, I wound up here with y'all, sick, in a bad spot, in a bad way. And as a result of these steps in this program, you know, and I know I've said it a couple times tonight, but I got absolute freedom. I got the freedom that I always wanted out of drinking by doing this program, by doing the steps. It relieved me of the bondage of self, and it relieved me of my addiction of alcohol. You know, it became, AA became that high for me. You know, being here with you all is, you know, and I don't know, I guess I just gush about the program because it saved my life. You know, I was a dead man walking. You know, I came really, really close to dying. And as a result of these steps, my health's better. I've got a better life. I've got a lot of blessings in my life. So thank you all for being here. You know, the program, like I said, saved me.
Thanks, Matt. Mike, alcoholic. Yeah, one thing I was thinking of while Matt was talking is the difficulty that I had in the fourth step and a lot of the program in general. And as I was sitting here, I thought, man, what a hypocrite I am. I came into this program to stop drinking and to be happy. Yet I want to do it my way. When I knew there were 12 steps. And then when I don't like the steps, I'm like, wait, I don't want to do it that way. And let's analyze this step. I think it's wrong. And what did you come in here for, Mike? Because you thought this might work, but you don't want to do it. You know, and that again, I think shows, you know, my propensity to fight and to push back rather than just to accept things. But I really like this reading. And in some respects, I touched on it when I shared a few minutes ago about kind of the empathy with other people. There are a lot of people out there who are spiritually unfit. You know, maybe most people, I don't know, I'm not going to try to quantify it, but certainly a lot of people that I deal with, that we deal with on a daily basis. And knowing that, I think for me, makes it so much easier to feel compassion for them. If I went through a lot of my life spiritually unfit, not having any sort of spiritual connection at all, having one higher power, and that being alcohol, and treating people badly. You know, my eighth step list was plenty long. I hurt plenty of people before I started drinking, when I wasn't drunk, but certainly a lot because of my acts while I was intoxicated. Plenty long list. I was spiritually unfit. And when I know I'm fast forwarding a bit, but it's useful, I think, to look at in the context of dealing with people. It's good to look ahead to the ninth step. when I was making amends and trying to set things right, trying to clean up my side of the street, I really hoped, and I know that I don't want to talk too much about the eighth or ninth step, but we all have to go into those steps with a certain state of mind and knowing that, hey, this may not go the way that I would love it to go, and that's okay. But I really hoped that those amends would go well and the person would accept the amends I was trying to make. And it probably took at some level those people to realize Mike was a really sick guy when he was doing those things. Those things that he's making amends for, he wasn't the man that he is now. He was sick. He wasn't spiritually fit. So if I can remember that, if I can remember how I felt when I was making those amends and hoping to get the sort of response that I wanted, although that's not up to me, but hoping that I would get the sort of response I want, and then put that in context of the reading, realizing other people we're dealing with are may not be spiritually fit, man, it makes it so much easier for me to understand their actions and just pray for them. You know, I used to hear when people said, why don't you pray for the person who's making you mad? And I thought, that's the dumbest thing I ever heard. I'm going to pray that he gets in a car accident on the way home. It's not what you're supposed to pray for, Mike. That, of course, is not what is meant. But by praying for that person, among other things, I realize it really sinks in that they may not be spiritually fit and they may be a lot like me. And if somebody's a lot like me, it really is hard for me to be mad at them, or a lot like I used to be, because I used to be a scoundrel. And if it weren't for you guys, I'd still be that person. So how mad can I really be? How big a resentment can I have at somebody if I was doing the same things to somebody at some point? Maybe if I pray for him or her, they can heal in their own way, whether it's this program or something else. Matt said something I want to touch on because it does relate to the fourth step, but it's, you know, this strength and how I was raised, and you know, real men don't ask for help; they just take care of stuff. That kind of mentality. And again, what I said a few minutes ago about looking at parts of this program when I first came in as being weak, you know, being forgiving and asking for help. I mean, the very nature when I came in, asking for help, calling other guys, like, what am I going to talk about? Like, I don't have anything to say. I didn't drink today. Click. I mean, I didn't know what I was going to say. But fostering those relationships where I can talk to other men, have honest dialogues. So when I get to a point where I'm suffering from something, when something bad goes on, that I can call and have an honest dialogue and get help, that's a real sign of strength. I didn't see that at first, but it takes so much strength for me to call another man and say, I'm going through something and I need help. That is a real sign of strength. I didn't realize that before, but it really is. But it leads us to somewhere. Talking about people who aren't spiritually fit, I'll tell you one of the coolest, most rewarding, fulfilling benefits I've gotten from this program is when I can be of service to somebody. And pretty recently, let's see, we're into October, probably back in August. I'm friends with a woman, and she called me, and she was really upset. She'd left town for something, and her husband went on a bender. You know, he'd been in and out of the program, but really never given it a real try, and went on a bender. And long story short, ended up, you know, the police did a welfare check and the paramedics came and was having seizures because of how much he drank. You know, fast forward, I remember showing up at the hospital 2 days later and not talking to him yet. You know, the guy who drank wasn't awake yet, but just showing up and telling the wife, tell him to call me when he wakes up. Tell me when he wakes up and I'll come back in. And just having her cry because I was there doing what we do. You know, the hand of AA is always there, but reaching out. That is a real kind of strength in the face of spiritual sickness that's pretty darn cool. When we can take what we've learned in this program and help somebody else, the alcoholic or somebody who's not an alcoholic, that really is a sign of strength. And that's what's so great about this program, is being able to, you know, come in as somebody who couldn't wake up in the morning without drinking to actually be of service to somebody else and do good in the world. So it's cool to see.
Our final reading is on page 67. Referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, We tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight. Y'all have about 1 minute each to wind up on this fourth column here.
Okay. No pressure. Yeah, I mean, you know, all I can tell you is this reading has been great for me because it's like it's pointed out a lot of things that I need to work on. The other thing that for me that it also highlighted was what she just read, which is normally most situations are made up in my head when resentments pop up. Normally it doesn't have anything to do with anyone or anything that's going on in my life. It's just me. I've been in long enough now to realize that when I have a resentment or I'm pissed at somebody or whatever, I need to look at where I'm at in the program. And I have this list of simple actions that I agreed to do on a daily basis. And if I look at those and I realize that the resentments are happening because I've cut something out of my program. I've either stopped praying, I've either stopped calling other alcoholics, I've stopped participating in my home group, whatever it is, there's something that is missing from my program that has got me off center. It has absolutely nothing to do with it. And in fact, what that reading says is what somebody else says about me, does or acts or whatever is none of my business. And it's when I start thinking that it's my business, I know that I'm off and that I've slacked somewhere in my program. So that's really the only thought that I can have to that.
Perfect.
Yeah. I'll be real quick. I remember I did my, you know, the fourth step in the fourth column and there were a lot more. I didn't realize how much involvement when I was very honest, when I actually got to be honest, all my involvement in things, you know, for years, like I said, I hadn't been honest with myself. Without even knowing it. But when I was honest and I looked to my role in something, you know, I minimized it in my head or I thought, well, yeah, I may have done that, but he really was in the wrong. If I looked at and focused on what I did wrong, man, that was eye-opening, right? That's so cool about this program is figuring out who we are, looking at ourselves and doing that searching and fearless moral inventory. Thanks, Amy.
Thank you very much. We are going to pass the basket in accordance with the seventh tradition. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining with outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements? Hey, Ben. Okay.
I'm an alcoholic named David.
Hey, David.
This Friday, October 20th, the 54th anniversary celebration of the Suffolk Discussion Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Again, Friday, October 20th, starts at 6:30 p.m. at St. Paul's Episcopal Church on Main Street, downtown Suffolk. They're going to have AA and Al-Anon speakers. I don't know who the Al-Anon is, but the AA is
going to Harry D.
Harry.
Terry.
Terry and Ebony are going to be speaking this Friday night. Buster Hawkins, that's his home group. He's kind enough to come and be a separate speaker here for us. I say we go. Let's party. Let's go rock out.
We're going.
In Suffolk on Friday night. I can text you a flyer. This information is also on the tidewaterintergroup.org, but it's this Friday, starts at 6:30. They're going to feed you.
Thanks, Steve.
Anybody else? Okay. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Literature. I don't know. Is literature available?
No literature.
We don't have literature. Yeah, come back.
Come back.
Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available here as after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to me. If you're shy, please get in touch with us at info@simpleactions.net. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. Meeting after the meeting. All are invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship at the meeting after the meeting that will be held at Cafe Stella, straight up Colonial Avenue. In closing, please join me in thanking Matt and Mike.
Hey, Mike. Good job.
Thanks to all who participated. After the Lord's Prayer, everyone will have a chance to come up and say thank you to our panel. David has volunteered to read the last two paragraphs on page 164.
Everybody have an alcoholic named David.
David.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.
All right, we have a nice way of closing.
I'm going to
that way. Yeah. We can go over there.
Perfect. We did it.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power and the glory forever. Amen.
Amen.